Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday edition. Got the finest of guests. He is James Antel, former prosecutor, former U.S. attorney, still hopefully currently a friend of mine. I appreciate sticking around, Jim.
Always.
You know, and just technically, when you plead no contest, that's still a conviction, though, right?
It is. Right?
Then I have been charged and convicted.
All right. Very good.
Back in the day, but, you know, youthful indiscretions and all that kind of stuff, Jim. I've learned from those moments, and now I try to be a little more discreet with my indiscretions.
The criminal defense bar, critically important to the operation of the rule of law. We all have our parts to play.
Jim, literally, I got lawyers coming out of my ass. Several of not well, maybe figuratively. Maybe that's not a literal. Jim, let's get back to the politicking, man. I'm taking you far afield here. The Trump, the possible getting to the top of the pyramid of the January 6th. And the January 6th committee has been very aggressive, at least behind the scenes. And we know they're pushing people for testimony. Subpoenas going out to people like Kimberly Guilfoyle. We understand Michael Flynn, the former pardoned national security advisor to the president. Well, he went and pled the fifth over and over and over again this week. But they're still collecting lots of testimony. And it seems like this is getting to the Trump inner circle, Jim. And there's also, as you mentioned, some pretty serious charges and now even conviction at trial under the charge of seditious conspiracy, my understanding. Right. And Jim, here's where the question comes. If you were going to charge the former president with a crime for trying to overturn the electoral results, it seems like the crime that may have been committed is conspiracy or seditious conspiracy. Jim, do you agree? Could this be a precursor in laying the groundwork for, you know, the future prosecution, if not Trump, of the very upper echelons of those that were involved in January 6th?
Right, absolutely. And plainly, there's an awful lot of focus right now upon those people. You mentioned John Eastman, who wrote this memorandum. We've got an awful lot of information based on what the committee has said, even in this California federal lawsuit just this past week or so. You've got the committee through Benny Thompson saying that the reason why we need the Eastman emails coming out of his operation there is because we have reason to believe that he and the president engage in conspiracy, a criminal conspiracy.
Criminal conspiracy. Yes,
they throw in common law fraud. They lay it out. And again, that's not an indictment. And we all know that the House Select Committee can't prosecute anybody. But I assure you that a committee would not make that representation in court. Lawyers would not do that, again, premised upon their own oath to the courts without having a basis for saying so. Again, not a charge, but that indicates that anybody looking at what the committee has assembled up to this point would come to that prosecutorial decision that there's enough to go ahead on with some of this against some of these people. Whether that specifically includes the president, boy, they certainly have placed him right in the middle of that, haven't they?
And Jim, they can. The January 6th, I like when they're termed the J6 committee. When the January 6th committee gets done and issues what they're hoping will be an interim report in June, at that time, they could recommend criminal referral to the Department of Justice, just like they recommended contempt of Congress charges against Steve Bannon and against Mark Meadows. Well, the DOJ moved against Bannon and has not yet moved against Meadows.
We're still waiting on Meadows.
I don't know why, but anyways, it seems like they're preparing the case against Donald Trump, not just to hand off to the DOJ, but perhaps to present to the American people, Jim, the court of popular opinion. And that could play out in these nighttime primetime hearings that we understand are coming next month.
Right. I think it does both things. And let's do the second one first. That may well be the big thing coming out of the Select Committee, which is, again, informing the American public of what this looks like graphically. Let's talk about specific conversations. We know that, for example, they believe Michael Flynn, there was this December 18th conversation in the Oval Office talking about declaring a national emergency, calling out the National Guard to redo the election, all that kind of thing. You put the president of the United States of America right in the middle of that conversation. That's something that America can appreciate in much the same way that we could appreciate what Watergate was all about when we hear Richard Nixon's voice talking about stonewalling and doing those things that are obstruction of justice. Now, it's going to take some time. It's going to take a little orchestration by good lawyers and, yes, maybe by some people who know how to present this well. But that could be the story that is presented to the American people about what this former president and the people around him, again, easily 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 people got the Willard Hotel event, all kinds of things, his own family. That can be a huge service in the same way that other reports on other things, 9/11, the Warren Commission, have done that. Then you also have the possibility of a referral to the United States Department of Justice. And I will say simply this, that going back to our previous discussion before the break or two, there's nothing that prevents the Department of Justice from right now, contemporaneous with this House investigation, from also conducting a grand jury investigation, also having FBI agents talk to the same people, also looking at emails, also looking at memorandums, all that archives material that we talked about that's now in the hands of the committee. If the Department of Justice is inclined to do that, there's no reason why they can't do it right now. They don't have to wait for the House Select Committee to give it that give the information. They can if they choose to do so. But again, as we've talked before, tick-tock, right? We are right now 5 years out from the obstruction of justice events by Donald Trump in the wake of the Russia investigation. Those counts begin to dissipate as we speak. And so, again, curious about whether or not the Department of Justice right now is pursuing a parallel, plainly very quiet, appropriately quiet if they're doing it, investigation. They don't have to wait on Benny Thompson and Liz Cheney to tell them what this case is all about.
James, I am... Again, referencing back to the statements made by Merrick Garland yesterday, he talked about the resources going into these investigations. My fear is that they're complicated. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of pieces. We've talked about perhaps a procedural coup, the Eastman coup, and we've also talked about specifically, you know, the insurrectionist domestic terrorists that showed up at the Capitol and crapped on the floors and tried to hang Mike Pence. Those seemingly are related but differing activities, at least to my perception. I'm not clear if the American people are able to consume all the complexities of this. And the last time they tried the very brief hearings they had with the officers, the Capitol Police officers, my greatest fear, we tried broadcasting some of that. We tried broadcasting the impeachment, the second impeachment of Donald Trump. Well, almost immediately, we were hitting the dump button and dropping the video. It was so profane, Jim. Mm-hmm. It was being played out in a profane way, and that's mm-hmm. how it really happened. They were effing kill these Absolutely. Cops, and whatever they were saying was playing out. But you can't play that on FCC-regulated mm-hmm. airwaves. So, Jim, can you envision a lot of beeps, a sanitized version? If you put this out and not ready for primetime fashion where kids can't watch it, parents can't bring their kids in the room because of the profanities in the video and the evidence that they're going to present, Jim, I think it undermines the ability of the mass broadcasting and the mass understanding of the American people. Jim, maybe that's just because I'm FCC regulated, but do you see my point?
Absolutely. It's a question of presentation. And until Americans, adults appreciate the violence, certainly the linguistic violence. One of those officers talked about the racial slur hurled in his direction. We talked about this on the air. He used the word explicitly, and I thought, you know what? Good for the cable company, the cable station, cable producers, not to bleep that, because you heard the violence of that word, you heard the ugliness of it of that word, and it became real to me and to others. You also see in the midst of all the visual horrors of that day, the attempt to kill people. You know, one of the three fellows who's now been charged with and convicted of and sentenced to one of the higher sentences, taking a fire extinguisher and throwing in the head of one of the police officers. You've got those specific, very clear, violent, and compelling images. It's tough to watch. And so your point is well taken. One of the challenges is going to be figuring out how you convey the horror of the language, how you convey the terror of the activity, and then saying, yes, indeed. How did that start? It started because there were people, maybe at a slightly higher level, the Oath Keepers, the Proud Boys, those kinds of people who have now been charged seditious conspiracy. And maybe it's even at a higher level where you've got people who are saying, yes, we're organizing this. What you need to do in the end as prosecutors to address those higher level people is you need to figure out what we call, you know, the small pieces of a prosecution unit. You're not going to be able to put together, even though you've got these talking indictments, the entire story of what happened over the course of weeks and months. You've got to be able to say, on this date, at this time, at the Willard Hotel, these people said these things to encourage these human beings to engage in this behavior, and this is what happened. That's the kind of real specific thing you've got, and that's the challenge of the Department of Justice right now, to put together something that is cognizable, is understandable, ultimately by the American people, but really by a jury that shows the connection between the conspiracy to put this together and what happened on your screen that day.
Jim, the Roger Stone videos, Lordy, there's tapes. The fact that he gave permission to documentary filmmakers, I think from Denmark, Belgium, maybe, I forget precisely, but they were basically there with him. And Roger Stone is kind of up to his eyebrows in this. And Jim, it's my understanding he brought many of the associations with those that have been charged with seditious conspiracy. He brought the Oath Keepers to the party. He brought the Proud Boys to the party. Hell, he used them for security at various events during the course of the week in the lead up to January 6th. Jim, what's your thought about ultimately the involvement of Roger Stone and all the video evidence that seems damning, just the little bits I've seen?
It is awfully damning, and it tends to support this notion that you have a direct connection to these people who we know, because we've got the indictments out, we know that there is going to be proof beyond a reasonable doubt about what they did, and you've got a direct connection with them. Why? Because not only do you know them, you're not just taking pictures with them at the county fair, you're engaging with them. That establishes what? A relationship. And to the extent that those videos and other things also establish conversation. What are you doing? What are we doing? Let's do this together. That's a contract. That's a conspiracy to engage in a violent activity. All of that is very compelling evidence. And again, prosecutors looking at that, it's not just happy day stuff that Roger Stone is doing in the crazy world that he inhabits. It is very compelling evidence. And you go in the same direction, the other direction, kind of laterally, the other people that Roger Stone was talking with. You can connect Roger Stone then, and you can connect the president, and you can connect other people in his ambit to the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys by virtue of those same conversational connections. One of the fundamental principles, of course, is if I'm a member of a conspiracy, I don't need to know what everybody in the conspiracy is doing. If I've got a common understanding about what our goal is and what our purpose is, I don't need to know that on a particular day Roger Stone talked to the head of the Proud Boys to accomplish this. But if I know, if I'm in concert with Roger Stone and he says, we're doing this, Mr. President, we're doing this, counsel to the president, Mr. Eastman, whoever, Jeffrey Clark, if you say that and do those kinds of things, the conspiracy is complete. And you can, in fact, be held liable criminally in a court of law.
Jim, we got one more segment. I think Dominic's going to step in here with us. Quick Terrific. Thought, though. Roger Stone, on the inauguration day of Joe Biden, was captured in the limousine on videotape, basically saying Trump is going to live to regret not giving himself a pardon. He said he's going to have lots of time in prison to think it over. He also said Merrick Garland is not a friend. Jim, could Trump have pardoned himself for his activities on January 6th when he was still the president?
Huge amount of debate about that. People are much better than I am, have different views about this. My view is that the answer is no, because of the way that the pardon language in the Constitution is described, which is giving to somebody else something that you have the power to do. I don't think it's reflexive to talk about the language. My view is he could not have done it, not to say he could not have tried to do it, and then we'd be in court about whether or not it would be enforceable.
Come back with us. The finest of guests, James Santel, right here in the Shaw. WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, Devil Radio. You're listening right now. Come back. Dom joins us soon, and Maggie Dawn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel as well.
You might as well be walking on the sun. Gordy, I hope there are tapes.
You never know, do you? You never know.
No, you don't.
I have no idea. I have no idea.
But you can imagine what it'd be like if they did, right? Huh?
Hi, everyone.
Taking them on their first real roller coaster.
Okay, buddy, come on over.
I don't know.
Let's measure.
Okay.
You're just tall enough.
Yes!
Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. Get the latest info about COVID-19 vaccines at getvaccineanswers.org. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.